I first met Larry Melton in November of 2017. I honestly can't remember any other time I've sat in a room with someone who brought so much energy. Now, fast forward to 2020, the company's 10 times the revenue and 10 times the headcount they were then. This meteoric growth has helped to land the building people on the Inc. 5000 list the last 3 years straight. This year, they were named number 318 overall and number 15 here in the state of Virginia. Today, we're going to hear from Larry, his thoughts on how they're able to do this, but also more on the topic and thought that he reminds himself of all the time, which is what got you here won't get you there. I hope you enjoy today's episode.
You're listening to the Northern Virginia Business Podcast. My name is Jessica Dubois.
And I'm Derek Wynn. Here, we chronicle the stories of successful business owners and executives who stand out from the crowd.
Whether you're driven by purpose or profit, tune in to learn how these leaders have built successful businesses,
helping to shape the landscape of Northern Virginia.
Larry Melton, welcome to the Northern Virginia Business Podcast.
Great to be here, Derek. Thanks for having me.
Hey, we sure do appreciate you having you on the episode today. The first question I want to start with is, you know, we recently just had the 19th anniversary for 9/11. And, you know, one of the things I remember when we first met was you told me what life was like at the White House when that all happened. So can you walk us through that and kind of what you were doing there at the time?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, Derek, I can't believe it's been 19 years, first off. It seems like it was yesterday, I think, for all of us, right? First thing is, you know, I was blessed with a 24-year career, federal government. GSA was my home. It's where I grew up. And, you know, in 2001, even more lucky that I was able to have an opportunity to serve for GSA at the White House. And interestingly enough, that first week it was 9/11, you know, crazy as it seems. It was life-changing, not just the job itself. The job itself was life-changing. The opportunity was life-changing. But to do that during 9/11, when emotions, you know, for what I was at that point, the 30-year-old, looking back going, wow, what did I get myself into? At the same time, if there was ever an opportunity to deal with adversity, wow, that was it, right? It changed my perspective on what is the most important pieces of life and the most important pieces of leadership. And that was probably a game changer for me in growing up, quite frankly, in my professional career. People were relying on you to make important decisions. People were relying on you to lead. And quite frankly, the sense of urgency couldn't have been higher. But the opportunity I had to serve during that time was just instrumental in kind of developing who I am today, quite frankly.
I think it's interesting talking about growing up. I mean, we always talk about growing up, and sometimes I think you grow up several times, right?
Yeah.
Throughout the course of your life, just because you're moving on to the next step. So, I mean, I can't think of maybe any better example of on the job training, you know, especially your first week on the job, basically, yeah, at that point, right?
Yeah.
What else did you take away from that? Like, as far as leadership, you mentioned that. Can you go into that a little bit more? Like, how has that helped you with where you are today, you know, even in the current environment that we're in?
Yeah, you know, it not just at the White House, but I would say throughout especially my last 10 years in serving in public service at the senior executive level, I think one of the big things is you learn really quickly about what servant leadership really means. And the one thing I was so proud about in serving the public sector is that you didn't have to worry about, you can put party politics aside. You were there for the mission. You were there for the purpose. You were there because you loved what you did in serving the public, regardless of what that party affiliation was. You really were there for the thrill of that work. And it was meaningful work, and it was making a difference, and you were impacting not just the taxpayer, but the mission of the organizations you're serving. And to me, that's what made me excited about, you know, kind of my next chapter in life and what got me to where do you follow your passion and you know, what's going to make Larry Melton who he is today. And to me, that was the foundation, is really focusing on servant leadership and really focusing on growing up being a people first centric person. And you know, in our younger age, sometimes we don't think that way. You think it's all about you and your career and what your needs are. But as I grew up, you know, quite frankly, through our professional career, and we all do several times over, sometimes it's yesterday for some of us. I think the learning opportunity there is that with every chapter and every event you have in life, there's a learning opportunity. And I would say, leading me up to 2013 with the launch of the Building People, what I learned and what I was able to prepare for in that 24-year federal career was foundational to making me the leader I am, not necessarily who I was, but who I am today for sure.
So you put in all this time in the government, right? So you put in your time, 20 plus years, and you say, I'm going to do something crazy, like go out and start my own business, right? So tell us kind of what was going through your head at that point, you know, with how you made that transition. And do you think that your time with the government helped you to create even more of a successful business as a result of that?
Yeah, I'll answer the latter first. First and foremost, I would say absolutely the government prepared me, not only just from the technical aptitude of what I've learned of the business, both facilities, real estate, construction, energy sustainability, and smart buildings of the future. Yes, absolutely. What really came of it is how to be a good leader, quite frankly. So instrumental, foundational. The thing that I loved about the public sector that I don't take for granted at all, and I would love to see it, you know, even more pronounced in the public sector today, is the investment in the young workforce coming out of college, the intern development programs, the management development programs that I got to experience as a young kid coming out of college at 21, and being able to experience the leadership, mentoring, and growing up in these intern management programs. They're not as pronounced as they used to be. The public sector is not making those investments today. And I think that that's the downside to it. And that's maybe why our younger workforce isn't going into public sector. I would love to see that ramped up, because what that did for me, it prepared me to learn the business. It prepared me to be a better leader. And quite frankly, it just set the future for me. So that's first and foremost. In terms of, you know, so I wake up one day and say, well, hey, I'm going to leave public service after 20 plus years and start a business. It didn't happen overnight. You know, in the back of my mind, I learned very early, especially through leadership, coaching, and development, is if you actually think of something over and over and believe in something over and over, it actually is going to happen. Very early in my career, when I started working around small businesses, especially in and around the service and the service agency like GSA and all the federal agencies who rely on these small business contractors, I found my passion and my heart and my soul feeling for them, recognizing they're trying to start a business, they're trying to make ends meet, they're trying to employ people, and they're trying to win a business and put paychecks on their table too. I found that that was interesting to me, but what was really interesting was really the passion around delivering the work and the energy and the compassion that I saw these small business owners have with solving the problems of the public sector and the customers, to me, is what really struck my fancy. And I said, I want to get back. And quite frankly, it was simple. What I missed, you know, I love being an executive. I love being a leader at the senior executive level. It was so foundational to who I am. But what I miss the most is really solving some of the transactional issues, the strategy, and the customer issues at a larger scale across the spectrum. And that's what I missed. And that was when I realized I wasn't able to exert my passion. My passion was really solving the complex problems of facilities today. And as you know, when you're an executive in Washington, sometimes you don't get to solve those. You're solving broader issues in government. And that's what I realized. I love my job. I love my career. I love my organization. I love my people. But I was missing where my passion was. And I felt like I needed to get up and follow my passion. And that was take a step back in order to take a step forward. And that's what really led me here. That's what got me there.
That's awesome. I mean, and you're doing it at a time too when, I mean, I think the pull from the family side had to have been difficult too, right? Was that hard for you, or how did you kind of make that all work?
Oh yeah, no, it's crazy. Actually, is probably the best way to describe it. If you look up crazy in the dictionary, there's probably a picture of me at one point. Is who walks away from a very stable, you know, paycheck from the government with, you know, the government pension, the whole bit, right? Who walks away from that to start up a business with no seed money, you know, very little cash on hand, with these grandiose plans to grow, with no, I don't want to say no strategy. Clearly, there was a strategy, but let's be real. By today's standards, I think most people would say, and I would not say this is for the faint of hearts. I think if everyone said, well, if this is so easy, and wow, you made it look so easy, everyone would do it. And let's be real. I would not recommend everyone do this. This is not for everybody. This is really hard stuff. And the hardest part is what it really does to, in the early stages of starting a business, especially in the government sector and the government contract sector in the DC metro area. Let's be real. There's thousands of companies that do what we do in the DC metro area, serving the public sector and serving facilities and real estate even. So when you say you're in that competitive market, the question is you have to ask yourself is what differentiates you? What are you going to do differently? And when you're in startup phase, you don't know. You're scratching and clawing. You're taking everything you can to build your business and build your platform. So no, it's really hard. It was really hard. It still is really hard. It doesn't change at all. But the stresses that come with it on the personal side, you know, if you think that you can do this as a part-time job and really make it work, that's the definition of insanity. There's just no way.
So take me through that growth path, because I know you've had a lot happen, you know, over the last couple of years. I mean, you've landed on the Inc. 5000 list a couple of times. I mean, you're, you know, now, what, 10 times the company you were just 3 years ago. So take me through that. So April 2013, you launched the company. How do you get to where you are today?
Yeah. And to be clear, we're Inc. 5000 three times.
Three times. All right. Awesome. I missed one. Yeah. Cool.
That matters. Yeah. So 2018, Inc. 5000, and then, of course, Inc. 500. And then we just made it Inc. 500 twice now. So cool. 472, I'm proud to hit number 318 as of a few weeks ago. So super proud of our accomplishments. But yeah, you're right. I mean, 10 times growth is insanity since 2017. And you say, oh my gosh, how do you manage that? And, you know, one thing I will say is that in 2013, you launch as a boutique consulting firm, your advisory. What you really want to do is build your brand. And one of the things that I was not blind to was, okay, government leader comes out, starts a small business. How do you redefine yourself as the building people versus Larry Incorporated, right? Because you're maybe, you know, you're working in the inner circles, you're working in the industry, you're well known in the industry, but let's be real, a name doesn't get you business. It really doesn't. Reputation, branding, and delivery will get you business. And I figured that out very, very quickly early on. I focused on, okay, how do I redefine and how do I define the building people as a business early on in the first 12 months? And my number one goal was to, within all of our verticals, make sure that we were able to get a win. No matter how big, how small, didn't matter. We wanted to get a win in all of our core offerings in the first 12 to 18 months. And we did that. So now I had brand, I had a take to market strategy that we have delivered these services across the spectrum in our first 18 months of business. Once we did that, I now had a roadmap of building that off of past performance, you know, a record of success. It didn't matter, you know, it didn't matter how big those contracts were. To me, that didn't matter. And then in 2014, really started to focus on, okay, so what do we have to do to differentiate ourselves as a prime contractor? How do we position ourselves for growth? And we diversified. We really focused on both being advisory and professional support services. And we really focused on, all right, who needs our help and targeted markets? And when we figured that out and who could rely or needed to rely on businesses like ours for services with a unique understanding of that marketplace, that's when we saw, you know, development of a pipeline, development of strategy. And in a period of those 2 years, what we saw, Derek, was absolutely insanity. You know, we built a capture, we built a roadmap, we built a pipeline, and we dedicated that these are the ones we're going to go after, and this is where we're going to go. And we went fast, we went hard, and we won. And then we said, oh my gosh, like any small business, now what are you going to do? And the answer was simple. We're going to go deliver. So when we figured out, okay, well, now we're delivering. Now how do we deliver well? Make sure that we have everything we need to make sure our employees can deliver well. Now what now? Now we've got the foundation. We're off to the races. We know what the process is. We know how it works. But now what? And that's when we started to focus on infrastructure. Okay, do we have enough of our infrastructure in place in the business, both financial, contractual, you know, HR, benefits for employees, all the little things that make a difference in any company? And we said, okay, so do we have all those things in the event that we became a $25 million to $50 million company today? What would happen? Are we prepared? And, you know, that's when I really looked deep into the organization. I said, we've got to figure out how to invest in our infrastructure so that we're prepared if we win a $50 to $100 million contract, we can deliver with our eyes closed, no problem. So it took some time, and that's where we really focused our energy. There is no difference in what we offer, whether it's public sector or commercial. And we've done commercial work. And most people recognize our growth has been pretty substantial in the public sector and a major differentiator in the facilities and real estate space in the public sector. However, we are doing work and have done work in universities, institutions, healthcare markets, and commercial, just not to the level of growth that we have in the public sector. So we are excited about our offering and how to expand in those commercial markets, quite frankly, and we think there's a huge value proposition. I think really the biggest differentiator, to answer your question on solving the complex problems of today, and I'll hold off on and come back to the post-COVID environment, because I think that's a little different. But going back, you know, between 2015 and 2019 pre-COVID, really, you know, building owners and occupiers, whether you're a business building owner or a building occupier, you have real estate facilities, energy sustainability, project management, portfolio management, and technology challenges that are facing you, and maximizing that workplace. And today, more importantly, much like the building people, where we pride ourselves on being a people-first company and focusing on our people, most of our organizations and customers, when we look, they look at the building as an asset, but are they using it as an asset to maximize their mission and their workforce? Question mark. And what we found very early on was the answer was no. So while we could deliver facilities management, we can deliver real estate, workplace strategy solutions, and energy sustainability solutions, and solve really complex technology solutions in the building, what really was missing was, how do you transform the people piece to that? You know, everything we do is really both around two things, technology and people. So we constantly are talking about the three pillars of technology, buildings, and people, but let's not sugarcoat. The building people is the foundational component to who we are and what we do. And that has been where our emphasis has been for the last 7.5 years, hands down, is focusing on the people. And how do you make sure that workforce is able to deliver within the assets of the workspace? And to me, that has not lost its luster, even in COVID or post-COVID, or during COVID and post-COVID. That need has not changed at all. The approach has maybe changed a little bit, but the need for focusing on people in the workplace and workspace is foundational.
And I think it's interesting, you know, I go to your tagline, smarter buildings, smarter people, connected real estate, right? So, you know, tell me about how that works. I mean, I think about bigger buildings, bigger problems. You know, you talk about institutions. I mean, you're talking healthcare, universities, et cetera. You're talking huge buildings. So how do you, one, go about finding the people that help your team to be who it is? And then two, what are you looking for in those people, and how are you helping them to help you fulfill the company's mission or objective?
Yeah.
You know, what kind of upskilling, et cetera, are you doing in that process?
Yeah. Well, first and foremost, around the biggest building does not mean you're the most important organization in the world. It's cool. And we think big buildings are really exciting. And that's exciting to me. However, the one who dies with the most buildings will not win. You know, that's kind of a mindset. And I'll tell you why. When you look at the public sector, you know, Derek, especially, again, let's talk pre-COVID, right? Utilization rates amongst the federal real estate portfolio was hovering around 35%. Just think about that. You're using your asset 35% of the time, but you're paying 100% of your operating costs. You know, who does that, right? So the question became for us is, all right, you bought the space, you leased the space, you're in the space. I want to focus on, all right, how do we maximize that workplace experience? Because I think if you build the right workplace and workspace, your employees will inherently want to come there.
You think about kind of where you are in that mission of smarter buildings, smarter people, connected real estate. How are you finding the people to fill that mission? And what are you doing to, what are you looking for in those people, and how are you helping them along the way?
Yeah, you know, from looking for talent optimization, and talent is absolutely the number one priority for us as an organization. And if you ask why, and that's a great question, is number one, the building people, we're you know, focused on real estate facilities management and maximizing the workplace, right? But we have always said we want people that want to work here, not have to work here. And the reason for that is it's simple. You have to have a passion for real estate facilities, energy, the project construction management, technology, building automation, and the future of facilities. And if you don't, then we're not probably the place for you. We want people that want to have the passion for moving the business needle and making a difference in the building, facilities, and real estate environment. And to find our talent, it's actually, I will say, we're very fortunate. First of all, people like to be on winning teams. We have been on a trajectory of growth. That makes it easy. When people say that you are recognized industry leader, recognized industry, you know, ribbons and badges and success stories and trophies, that helps. But you have to be able to build the credibility with a workforce that is brings the credibility to your client, right? So we are constantly looking for the people that we know can build credibility when they sit in front of a client. You know, very simple manage, sell, do mentality. But let's focus on, you know, obviously we know everyone's job is to sell and do business development and grow, right? So let's put that aside. Manage and do. You have got to be able to manage the solution for your customers and really be able to build the solution and solve the complex problems of your customers today. Conversely to that, your employees, when you're a leader, and we hire leaders to manage this kind of workforce, you have to be able to help your employees solve those complex problems too. And when the rubber meets the road, let's be real, sometimes they got to get in the trenches and do the doing, right? And sometimes that means they got to roll up their sleeves and get in there and do it. And so we're always looking for the people who know how to solve those problems and deliver what that center of expertise is that they have. So anyone can have great initials after their name, but can you go in and solve that problem for the customer, leveraging your expertise and leading with your expertise? And we've built that foundation and being very, very strategic in our talent optimization and making sure that we're hiring the right people who are wired for the job. We're really focused on that talent.
Some people work their entire lives just so that they don't have to get their hands dirty again. But it sounds like, you know, especially when you're in a high growth business, you're going to have a fair bit of that. So, you know, do you have examples of maybe like where you've struggled to kind of get the team to rally around something like that? Like, how do you, as a business leader, if you have the right person who has a skill set, who has all these different things, how do you make sure that the engine keeps on moving forward when one of those challenges come up?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. And the example I'll give you, Derek, is when you win a contract, and sometimes, especially in the government contracting world, an incoming contract, you win it, you're onboarding these employees, and we never want people to feel like it's just a paycheck. We are not just a paycheck, right? We're a differentiator where they see themselves as, okay, I'm a facilities manager on site for a client. No, you're a facilities management consultant. You're a solution provider in facilities management. A good example is, and I always say it's the rule of three. Sometimes when people are trying to, they jump on board, they're on board with the company, and they're really starting to understand our offering, our services, our solutions. And they realize, wow, I'm really at a company that is passionate about doing this. That's great. But the best compliment I got from an employee recently, he had been on board with us for about 60 days. And he said, you know, hey, Larry, I think I got it wrong. I understand I'm working for a great real estate and facilities management firm, but we're not just the building people, we are building people. And I said, that's right. And we pride ourselves on being a people first company. And I think that's one of the foundational pieces that differentiates us in the marketplace is if you focus on the people and their growth, their needs and their development and how they are progressing in their solutions to their customer and say, you know, look, I would say if you're in a job and you're working here and you say, well, I'm bored and I'm looking for something else, bring that someone's attention because there's a high probability we probably have another opportunity for you to grow. And I think a lot of times people don't look at their career and progression that way. They will take a step back and say, oh, well, maybe it's time to shop my resume or look around because I've overstayed my welcome or I've grown out of this job. And here it's different because we're constantly looking for, okay, you want to do something different. What does that different look like? But how do we grow you as a leader within the organization, leveraging your expertise? And I think that's been a big difference. And I think that's an important differentiator in the marketplace, especially in the real estate facilities world that's changing. Look, it's changing like rapid fire, especially in, I mean, look at, did we ever see, none of us really saw COVID coming. So the offerings today are decidedly different. I think our facilities managers today are in real estate and workplace strategy folks today, our smart buildings folks today, they're all thinking different solutions that they didn't think about, you know, a year ago.
What about everything? So, I mean, we've talked about a really kind of rosy picture, right? So you scale your business, you grow, you've got all these great people that are helping to serve all of your clients and everything's awesome. But what about some of the challenges you've come across over the last, you know, let's say 7 years? What are your takeaways from some of those challenges? Like, what's your advice to others?
Nothing's easy. And, you know, I think the number one thing I constantly remind myself is, and it excites me at the same time, Derek, is I look at myself in the mirror, my 2 feet hit the ground every day, and I say, okay, you know, what got you here won't get you there, first and foremost. So you constantly have to be on your toes, on your feet. It's interesting because I reflect and think to myself that if I knew then what I knew now, would I be doing what I knew today? And the reality is I'd probably be too afraid. Today's environment, the things you know today, let's be real. And I think you got to be somewhat crazy to try to launch a business and do this if you knew today what you knew now. But now I look back and I constantly say to myself, because I know now what I didn't know then, I wish I started earlier, right? That's the craziness of this entrepreneur, small business growth and the whole strategy. But I think that the most important piece in facing those challenges, Derek, is you have to, when your 2 feet hit the floor, you've got to have a passion for what you do. That's not work. It's really, you know, it's about passion. And if you can't follow your passion and have excitement about what you're doing, what you're solving day to day, then you're checking the box off. You're a robot. You're moving. You're, you know, and that's not healthy for anyone. I think that's been a big differentiator, I think, for me personally, in positioning myself for growth and dealing with the challenges that come and the adversity that comes with small business growth, is really reflecting to make sure I'm constantly following a passion, right? Because if you're not, then you're probably in trouble.
And has that passion changed for you over the last maybe a couple of years? Have you found yourself going further down one path or another when it comes down to passion?
Yeah, let's be real. Some days I'll look in the mirror and say, what am I doing? How did I get here?
Yeah.
You know, look, if I sat here and painted a picture that it's all rosy and great and, you know, oh, this is so easy, I'd be lying to you and I'd say, let's strike that from the recording. But no, let's be real. It's every day is a challenge. Every week is a different challenge. Every month, I don't know what's going to come a month from now. You think you know, you don't. And going back to my statement of what got us here won't get us there, it kind of makes you reflect of, you know, when is enough enough and how big is too big? But one thing I do know is right now, from a mentality standpoint, how we need to operate, and I tell our team all the time, is we're too small to be big, but we're too big to be small. And we've got to focus on the fact that, you know, we're a small business. Let's be really clear. We're a very small business, especially compared to most businesses in the DC metro area on a national scale. You look, we're a small business, but you've got to think like a big business constantly. And what that looks like and feels like, you know, look, like any small business, we're trying to figure it out. But you've got to have a focus and you've got to focus your attention and try to keep the emotions out of it. That's really hard for me, is taking the emotion out of the bumps in the road and the curveballs and the you know, obstacles that you face, is trying to separate your constant emotions that come with the chaos of a small business growth of this size. That's probably the hardest part. And the best advice I can give anyone is keep your emotions in check. And look, you know, I'm preaching to the choir here, because I think, you know, I need to probably take my own advice on a daily basis, but it's hard to do. That's the hardest part of this whole ride.
How do you kind of get separated and detached? So, I mean, you talk about working hard and playing hard, right? So you live, work, and play in Loudoun County. Yeah. I mean, I think you've probably got the shortest commute of anyone I know. So tell me what that's like for you. So you're in Loudoun County. I know you just acquired space. So going back to what you mentioned before, who's crazy enough to, you know, expand the real estate at the peak of COVID here in August? You know, tell me what that has been like for you.
Well, first and foremost, live, work, play in Loudoun County is, to me, the dream come true. It's exactly what I wanted. I pictured it. I said I wanted to, number one, I wanted to be able to have a great quality of life. And you know, really what started it, Derek, is when you're doing a long commute back and forth to DC in this marketplace, like a lot of parents do every single day, sometimes you leave it dark, home at dark, and you don't get to see your kids, and you see your kids at bath time only, right? And I felt like that was missing the boat. And I said, what's the way out? And how do I figure this out? And how can I be a better dad? And that's what really influenced my decision of the only way to do that and have a short commute is to be a local business and position myself for that. So that's what I did. It was obviously, looking back, probably the best decision I ever made, quality of life wise. But yeah, live, work, and play in Loudoun County. I got to tell you, and the second piece to it is being a small business owner and in my community, being a part of the community, the growth, and being in, more in touch with my local community is what I get a thrill. It's really fun to be able to be at work, you know, well, let's just say, you know, 7 to 5 hours, 7 to 6 PM, and then turn around and go out to dinner right down the street in downtown Leesburg is a dream come true. And when you get to see familiar faces over and over, it's really nice to be part of that community, and that community feel is exactly what I wanted. So there's something to be said about that. And, you know, it's not for everybody. For me, it's exactly what I wanted. And I actually, you know, the fact that I get to experience it every day is by far the best reward on a personal level, besides working with the people at the building people. Mm-hmm. That's the best part about it, is being part of my local community and getting to know my local community on a better scale.
What's interesting, you know, you talk about, tell me about your process of expanding your own real estate, your office space there in Loudoun.
Well, yeah, you know, it's interesting. First of all, we didn't know COVID was coming, but last year, about this time, late summer last year, our business was growing. We saw our footprint growing, and I really wanted to stay in Leesburg and Loudoun County, in particular the hub zone. And we saw, you know, little opportunity for real estate expansion out there in the marketplace. And we really pounded the ground. And when we landed, fast forwarding, in late January, early February, when we landed an opportunity to acquire some space, the answer was unequivocally, yes, let's make this work. We're off to the races. We're planning it. And thankfully, unbelievably so, mainly because of great partners, not just our local bank, John Marshall Bank. I still give thanks to them for making this work. But the SBA, through COVID, I could not think of two organizations, but one public sector, one private bank, that made something like this happen. We were able to buy our headquarters, 25,000 square feet here in downtown Leesburg. It is a dream come true. And part of that was, it was very strategic, and it's strategic in the sense of, you know, we're selling the strategic component of maximizing the workplace and the future of facilities for our customers. And the real question we asked ourselves was, how do we model that behavior? You know, can you model the behavior, and how do you do it? And how do you make sure that your customers can walk into your space and say, wow, you're not just selling those services and telling us how to do it, you're doing it. And that was part of the impetus for us wanting to purchase real estate and position to model the behavior is, you know, don't just do what we say, but let's model it and, you know, say what we do.
What do you recommend any small business has in their tool belt when it comes down to running a successful business? What do they need in that toolkit?
Yeah. Partners. And I don't mean business partners within the business, but partners you can pick up from the phone and call and say, hey, I have a problem. How do you think I should solve this? You know, I don't take for granted when we met several years ago, Derek, your vision and your passion based on what you do in the healthcare market. And I needed that help. And that's how we reached out to you. And you weren't just a service provider, but you were a partner and you were a consultant in helping me solve the problem. Being able to know who to go to and when to go to at the right time to say, I'm stuck. I don't know how to make this decision and I need help making the decision. Or sometimes being able to talk about those problems you're having out loud with someone who's been there, done that, is absolutely the most important component. If you think that you can solve all your problems alone because you're the smartest person in the room, you're doomed for failure. I will say that if you're too afraid to pick up the phone and call someone and say, I need help, please help. Can you coach me? Can you offer me some mentoring? You know, that's probably the single best advice I can give anyone. I can't tell you from 2013, even today, you know, before this interview with you, I was on the phone asking people for advice. Hey, what do you think of this? Or, hey, I've got an idea. Can you tell me if I'm crazy or not? Is this a good idea, a bad idea? And what do you think the market will think of this? And generally, it leads to, when you have good relationships like that that you can reach back to, I will tell you, it becomes so foundational to people saying, you know, I've got a friend who's been there, done that, who can answer that better for you. And building on those relationships and then building partners, a bunch of partners that you know you can rely on for solutioning. You know, you don't have to, I always say there's plenty of work to go around, and 50% of something is better than nothing. And I think sometimes in this world, we think I have to have the entire thing in order to be successful. And that's not true, but building partnerships and credibility and solutioning with partners has been foundational. But just don't be afraid to ask for help. I think there's plenty of groups out there, teams out there, and leaders out there that love helping organizations like us out there, and I'm fortunate for it. But I can tell you, we have been, I look back and all those forks in the road in the business, right, from 2013 to today, where we were standing at the fork in the road and we were going left or we were going right. And thankfully, we went the right way. I don't know if it was left or right, but we went the right way. But I can tell you there are foundational decisions that we made in the last 7.5 years that if we didn't make those decisions, I wonder if we would have tanked or failed as an organization if we didn't make those decisions when we did. And to me, it's the partners and the ability to pick up the phone and have resources available to you.
That's awesome. You mentioned another key part too, which is sustainability. And I know a lot of times when you grow and you're focused on the business strategy, you know, sometimes culture can take a backseat. So how have you kind of wrestled with that as far as a potential issue? Like, how have you preserved the culture you built?
Yeah, great question. And I mentioned a little bit earlier about the investment in talent optimization. And I think what we've done, as you're aware, Derek, we've instituted use of predictive index on making sure that how do we make sure our workforce is wired for success? And one of the big things in building teams in looking at our talent optimization is really focusing on how do I know, whether it's Larry and Derek, how do I know we're going to be wired together for success? And I think the one thing that we've done from top down, and I'm never afraid to say it, is there's things I'm really good at, and there's things I'm probably not that great at. In fact, there's probably a longer list of things I'm not that great at. And being able to look in the mirror and say, yeah, you're really not, and it's okay. I think positioning our workforce to be able to look at themselves on where their strengths are and saying, I'm really good at this, and I'm not that good at this, and then positioning them for success and communication, and I think starts from the top down. I think it's foundational that I can look at my leaders to my left and my right and say, you know what, hey, you should probably handle this because I'm probably not going to, maybe I'm not the best communicator for this type of situation or that situation, or maybe there are situations where they say, you know, we really need you to do this, Larry, because you're really good at this, and you'll take a better position on explaining it and maybe showing some passion. So, you know, I think it's really looking at your workforce, looking at yourself from within and saying, you have to know when you have a great skill set and when you don't have a wonderful skill set, and figuring out how to build that dynamic within your team that everyone feels comfortable. The number one gift I say we give everyone is the gift of coaching. And that starts even with me. I think I've always said that if someone on the team feels like I could have done something different, I want them to walk in and say, you know, hey, Larry, I heard you say this in the meeting and I get it, but here's what I heard and here's how I think you probably could have said that differently because here's how I interpret it. I want that feedback. And for those organizations or those leaders that say, yeah, no, just trust me, I've got this and just do what I say. Those aren't the type of organizations that I think people want to work for. And quite frankly, that's not who we are. I mean, that's why I take a huge amount of pride, as you know, Derek, on our Glassdoor rating. I mean, the fact that we got a 5-star Glassdoor rating doesn't mean we make mistakes and we're perfect. No, absolutely. We make mistakes. We sometimes get it wrong, but it's positioning yourself to say, all right, we got it wrong this time. How do we avoid that from happening again? And what are we doing to make sure, whether it's an employee experience or something doesn't happen again and we learn from it? And I think those are important pieces to building your brand, your reputation, and your credibility as a leader. And that's what we expect, quite frankly, of our workforce. And messaging that and staying true to our message over and over is absolutely critical to stay on message and make sure that people understand that that's who we are and don't deviate from it. And if that means that you stay, let's be real, if that means you stay as a small business, you know, in the $25 to $50 million range and you don't grow beyond that, but you're a top-notch organization, look, I'll take that. I don't think that's considered failure. I think there are people out there that would consider that failure, but I don't. I think, and you know, question mark is, you know, how do you define success, right?
So talk a little bit about that. You know, where's success for you and what do the next 3 to 5 years look like for Larry?
Oh, wow. You know, fortunately or unfortunately, you know, as one advisor said to me, with me, enough equals more. But when is enough enough? And I think enough is enough when I know that, or I sense that the workforce feels as though we're losing that cultural feel of a small business and small business feel, and our credibility and delivery maybe feels like it's suffering, or we're having too many instances where we're lacking in delivery. I think that's when enough has to be enough. What does that look like from a definition standpoint? I'm not sure I can pinpoint it today. Right now, enough equals more. But as long as our workforce, our team, and this team is delivering, you know, as promised, so to speak, and enjoying coming to work when they walk in the door and feeling the passion, then to me, that's the recipe for success right there, is making sure that people still feel the passion, the energy, and the love for what they do every day. And when I see some dynamic changes there, hit it head on, find out what's causing it, and reevaluate then. But
that's awesome. If people are looking to get in touch with you, Larry, how would you recommend they go and do that?
Yeah, email is best. Lawrence, LAWRENCE.Melton@thebuildingpeople.com. Check out our new webpage. We just launched our new webpage. We're excited about that. So you can go there, info@thebuildingpeople.com. But, you know, happy to take any follow-up questions, any follow-ups, Derek. Just appreciate, appreciate all that you've done for the building people. You're a friend, and I just appreciate all that you've done with us as well as a partner. So just thanks for giving us the opportunity. This is fun. I love what you guys are doing. I love your energy, and it's probably why you're one of the best in the industry, right? That's why.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you, Larry.
Thank you for tuning in. You can listen to this episode and subscribe to future episodes on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to give us that 5-star review so that we can get our podcast out to more and more listeners. If you are a business leader or know of any business leaders that you would like to nominate to be a guest on the show, please visit us at thenovabusinesspodcast.com.